it does is reaches into your brain chemically and locates your happiest memory chemically, and then locks onto that emotion and freezes it chemically, and then it keeps your happy happy.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Selling Out Show, where we screw up life at our leisure for your listening pleasure. I am one of your hosts, David Schultz, and just to get this out of the way, you may notice I have a small sinus issue, but fret not, because I do in fact have a tissue. I will continue to press on because, you know what, intrinsically, deep down inside, I am a warrior, here for you. But guess what, folks? We got a good one planned for you today. And why is it so good? Is it because of what we're going to discuss? Whoa. If you notice, I just said we. Because back by popular demand, oh yes indeed, the man, the myth, the legend himself, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, Nathan Gorzinski. Nate, how the hell have you been, man?
Oh, man, I know it's been a long time. I've been okay. Yeah. But it has been a long time, huh?
Well, it has been a long time, and okay, while acceptable, is not all the, at least the level of vigor and vim I was hoping to get out of you after this grandiose introduction.
Well, I'm okay, which is better than it's been. I've a lot of things have happened since I've been here.
Okay.
But I'll say that, like, part of it was I was really sick for, like, it wasn't COVID. I'll get that out of the way. I was laid out, had no energy for about a week or so recently, and it took a lot out of me. Had two COVID tests during that time.
Ooh.
And they were both negative, and I am vaccinated and everything. Like, I don't know. It was weird, but I just was like, what else could it be? Like, it's some horrible virus I got. But anyway, so that's why I'm like, I'm just kind of okay, because I'm still kind of, that was recent enough.
Well, hey, I'm going through that right now. Well, something like that. I mean, my face is all stuffy and puffy and feeling, congested. So I'm not exactly laid out, because I can just take some Medicina and get back going. I mean, my pipes, I think, still sound good.
Yeah. No, you sound sultry. You sound like Demi Moore, like kind of smoky.
Hey, hi there. Demi Moore in Striptease, maybe, perhaps?
I was thinking One Crazy Summer.
Oh, that's the best Demi Moore right there. She was a rocker.
She was playing at the Dewdrop Inn.
Yeah, the Dewdrop. Well, I'm glad you're on the mend. I know for a bit there you were down in Tennessee.
That's correct.
Yeah, doing your animal tricks. So tell me a little bit about that. What was going on down south, man?
Yeah, well, we were down at the Doberman Nationals.
Okay.
Or the Dober Nationals, as I like to call them, because it sounds fun.
Not the Dewdrop, the Dober Nationals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been into dog shows for a little while. Well, I'll clarify. Carly has been really into dog shows with my significant other, which means I have been into dog shows as well, because it's kind of like, it's hard to.
Yeah. Two peas in a pod, right? You tied together at the hip. Lovers. Yeah. Going to do what the other lover wants to do. So there you go. So you're down at the Doberman show with your lady love. Did you win?
Well, it's competitions every day, one after another, like hour long at a time. Not even an hour, usually, like 35 minutes at a time. So it's like, so there's so many of them. So yeah, we did. We did actually win. We won, I believe, two first place ribbons or prizes, and then like a third and a fourth over the course of, like, basically everyone we entered with our dog, we won something, I think, if I remember correctly.
Okay. This is like the reference to a sports franchise. Even though you don't play for them, you still say we. I mean, didn't your dog do all the work? Shouldn't your dog be heralded as the champion here? But you keep saying, oh, me and my old lady, we won.
Yeah. It's like we're pregnant.
Yeah, no, we're not. Exactly. Yeah. But still, like, your dog did good. I mean, what's the whole thing here? Like, you teach the dog how to do something. That's why you're taking credit?
No, it's not even that much.
Like, really?
Well, the training she's gotten is very minimal comparatively. Like, there are what's called, like, agility training where they run through a whole course. And that's something we'd like to get into. Or there's obediency or, discipline or something kinky like that. But like training where it's, they do tricks. Yeah. They have to know so many tricks where it's like, it might be there's a list of 15 tricks and you have to do at least like 8 or 10 of them, so you have kind of a selection, but it's things like, they can jump up on something on command, like a stool, or they walk across a beam, or, certain things.
I'm not impressed.
But it's like 15 of those different things, and they all add up to a pretty well-trained dog.
Yeah, tell the dog to order a pizza. That would impress me right there.
I used to train a dog at this halfway house years ago, and we taught it to turn on light switches.
You mentioned that on air, I think, the last time you were on. So, coinky-dinker right there, Bubs.
It wouldn't surprise me. My life is all about dogs. I'm sure I've talked extensively about dogs lately. I don't know. Dave, we used to show, I say we again.
There you go.
Carly used to show horses. When I was first together with Carly, like, 8-9 years ago, we would go to horse shows. Carly had a couple horses. She would usually take one at a time to different shows, never took more than one. But still, dude, that's a huge production. You have to have a whole separate trailer just for this animal to cart this animal to, whatever show. And you might be driving an hour or two away with this fucking giant beast in a trailer behind the truck that could, freak out at any time and start slamming against the walls of the thing. And like, we actually have to even wrap them up in this like felt stuff, like felt strips, like wind them around the horse's ankles and put these like protective boot things over their hooves and this hood over them. Like, the point is, you have to package this whole thing up, get to the barn super early in the morning. It's a big production.
Sure.
To do it.
Yeah.
With the dog, the dog jumps in the car and we go. You know what I mean? And like, so it's, I like it a lot more doing the dog shows if I had a choice. But
you downsized. I mean, you could still wrap the dog in velvet.
Just for fun, I guess.
Yeah, nice and relaxing, sure. But I mean, why would you want to cart around a 1,000-pound fucking prima donna?
Yeah.
Where you can just tell Fido to hop in the fucking back seat.
Yeah.
There you go. Man. Yeah.
Dude, and the thing I like about it is that we have a Doberman that we got from this breeder, and pretty much all of the dogs she's bred they're active show dogs for the most part, unless they're too old. So we go and we meet up with all, it's like a family of Dobermans that all kind of like meet up at these shows.
Oh, and so you separated them, right? So that's what you did. You're all villains. So. You took them from their cousins and brothers and sisters. But then, hey, once or twice a year, hey, look, that dog is related to you, or at least should be related to, but we yanked you away just to show you off. Did that make you feel bad?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. But yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Callie does get along with her sister. She doesn't get along with a lot of dogs, but she does like get along. I always say, I think Callie is like racist.
This is your Doberman now.
Yeah. Callie. Okay. Oh yeah. I guess I should have clarified.
You did mention too, the horses were wearing hoods. So that's not a good sign for race relations. So what's going on with the dog?
Wow. Well, the dog is German and only seems to like other Dobermans for the most part. But I don't know if that makes me racist for noticing something like that in a German. Like, am I a racist against Germans? I don't know. This whole thing is weird.
Yeah, you are a human equivalent of Cujo. That's you. real quick, speaking of dogs, did you know that Turner and Hooch got canceled on Disney Plus?
I didn't know there was a series for Turner.
Yeah, there was. I mean, I just read that this morning, and I'm a little bummed out. because it's one of those things where it's a family-friendly show, so I can watch it with my 9-year-old. Yeah, it's also self-serving because one of the actresses on the show is, like, super hot. So I'm, like, watching it, and he's like, oh, yeah, cool. Like, the guy's bomb with a dog, and they're stopping crimes. And I'm like, oh, show me more of that dog trainer. That's what I'm here for. I'm not here
for you. Yeah, I love those scenes.
Yeah, I'm going to slobber all over that. Come on now. So I'm a little bummed out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
I watch way too much TV. This is an issue.
You're not even kidding. You really watch Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, I have been, and I wrap myself up in a tortilla blanket and watch all this television. But I just figured I'd bring that up because, you know, dogs.
Sure.
TV show relating to dogs. So
yeah, man.
Yeah, I guess
Dude, I see a lot of those dogs, those Turner and Hooch dogs.
I don't get that. That's gross. Those things are fucking
They're awful.
Why would anybody want something like that?
I agree. Carly and I both made a decision. No more drooly dogs. We used to have like this basset hound bulldog mix who was a sweet dog, but he was a drooly fucker and it was disgusting.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. So if we have the option, we're not going to choose that option anymore.
Yeah,
so.
No, I mean, imagine like that was embodied as a person. Yeah. They'd be put in an institution or like have some kind of like, I don't know, medical card. Yeah. Please excuse me. It's like Tourette's, but man, this is probably a legit thing. I bet you there are like, or some kind of condition for drooling.
Overactive salivary glands.
Exactly. You know? Right. Yeah.
I'm sure.
That's what it is. So, most deaf.
I guarantee it. But yeah, man. So to wrap up, it was fun down there. I got to hang out with all the dogs because the women are mostly the dog showers, the ones that are more into it. I happen to be one of the men that go with his significant other, to be honest. And like, I just hang out with the freaking dogs all day and walk them one by one or, you know, a few of them. And so I just get to hang out with dogs all day. And I enjoy it. Yeah. I like get baked and just walk dogs all day.
Choose dogs over Dave. I know what's up. I know where your priorities lie. It's whatever, man. It's great. Good for you. Yeah. I'm just at home watching Disney Plus, and you're out gallivanting with racist dogs. So, cool. Awesome.
Sorry, man.
Is that really all you had to say about the subject? Because I want to switch gears now.
No, that's fine.
I want to take it to a different place because, you know, Christmas, maybe you heard of it. I don't know. Apparently,
there's a war on it.
Yeah. It's ongoing. It's longer than the war on drugs. Yeah. If you have heard of it, it's right around the corner. It's coming up this month. It is, in fact, December. So, it's the time of giving. That's what it is. It's time for charity. Some people say charity starts at home, which is a line I've never understood. Do you know where that comes from, or the origins of the whole charity it starts at home thing?
I don't know. Maybe it means you should feed your kids.
Yeah.
It's like charity.
Feed your children. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think legally that's a responsibility you have. So it can't be charity. Charity is like a voluntary giving of something, I assume. I'm not very charitable.
I don't know. Maybe dessert then?
Yeah.
They don't need dessert.
Yeah. If anybody knows the origins of charity starts at home, feel free to email us, sellingoutshow@gmail.com, or hit us up on the socials. Twitter, Selling Out Show, yada, yada, yada. You guys get the drill. Selling Out Show. But I'm curious. I want to know, and I don't want to Google it. I don't want to do that because that's just too easy. You know what I mean?
That's what you people are for.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And he's talking to you. Yeah, you. Yeah. Mr. Whoever you are with the earbuds in.
Or Ms.
Ms.
I might be talking to Ms.
Yeah. I mean, I like to listen to shows while I'm naked in the shower. So maybe I'm reaching out to you, inquiring about this at a very private moment for you.
Someone is listening to us in the shower.
Yeah, hello. So. Hi. Did I tell you about the dog trainer in Turner and Hooch? But anyway, back to the task at hand here. I'm bringing all this up because, you know, Nate, a long time ago, we're talking the early aughts, the OOs.
Yeah.
That is the aughts, right?
Yeah, that would be aughts.
Sounds like the Mars Attacks aliens.
It ought to be called something else.
Your dad joke game is toit. Yes. So you were doing some work with the Salvation Army. Now, a lot of people know the Salvation Army because they got their Santas everywhere ringing that damn bell. Right? Yep. Which must be a tough thing now because no one carries cash. Do you ever keep change? I don't keep change.
No, man.
It's dirty. It's filthy. Yeah. I don't want it in my pocket. I got a cat.
Maybe people are throwing Bitcoin in there. Is that how that works?
Yeah. Can I Venmo you, Santa?
Yeah.
You know? That's actually, I probably just gave them a fucking great idea. They put the little QR code right on the golden, I'm going to call it an urn, but it's a bucket.
Kettle.
Kettle. There we go. That's seasonal. Thank you very much.
Cauldron.
This is not Halloween anymore, but any of them are applicable, I suppose. But, you know, you seem to think, or know, rather, that the Salvation Army might, in fact, be running a scam.
All right. Well, them's strong words.
Yes,
but,
indeed.
I'll just go so far as to say that I see the Salvation Army Santas everywhere, and it just kind of like, I don't usually give to them,
mm-hmm.
and it's a personal thing. It's not something that, like, most people, yeah, like, feel free to give. They actually give, I guess, about 82% of their charities do go to what they're supposed to go to. It's very, you know, the overhead's not huge. They're not keeping a bunch of the money. They're rated very highly as far as charities go.
Okay.
They also, their big business is also helping addicts. They have a drug and alcohol recovery, you know, section of their service where they have these buildings all over the place that are residential drug and alcohol treatment programs, like halfway house type programs. Now, I happen to have stayed at one years and years ago. I didn't last super long, and I'll explain why. Like, the program is run by Christians, very devout Christians, which, you know, whatever, I figured out, you know, that's fine. I can handle that. I'm personally an atheist, but I'm like, I can deal with that at a program.
Yeah, you can mingle and jingle. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I need help. You know, this place is willing to take me. I can do this. And I get there, and I'll admit the facility was pretty nice, but, like, the conditions weren't bad where you lived. The food was pretty good, but like, they have you work, like, as an addict who's just coming in off the street, they make you work, like, a 40-hour shift for their company, which, you know, it's good to learn to work. They call it work therapy. Great.
Okay.
But they make you work 40 hours a week the whole time you're there, and they give you, at the end of the week, a $5 gratuity, they call it. They call it work therapy, but they give you a gratuity, not a paycheck.
Well, Nate.
But it's $5.
Can I stop you for a second? Because
sure.
You've piqued my curiosity here.
Yeah.
You just said they take you in right off the street.
Yeah.
There's no, like, detoxing or even, training or something? Like, it's just like, hey, now, do whatever the fuck we're telling you to do, and you're going to get you $5. You could be fresh.
Yeah.
You could be steaming hot addict state here. You know what I mean? So what happens there?
That's true. They don't have a detox there. By entering, you kind of already are saying you've got that part of it out of you. Like,
okay.
Some, yeah. So it's kind of the place you would go after a detox. But they will take you right from the street. If you don't need it, they let you, you know, make that decision. If you don't think you need the detox, you can go right there.
Gotcha.
If they take you, you know, if there's room. But the reason I went there was because it's one of these places, it's hard to get into a halfway house. Like, there's a waiting list a mile long, but there's always beds at the Salvation Army. And that was kind of a warning when I was looking for a place. It was like, people would say, there's always room there. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Well, why? You know, like, but I figured, like I said, I can handle it. But it's like, on top of the work thing, the work is what it is. You know, I'm not whining about having to work 40 hours. It's, you're in this dirty factory where all the donations come in, and you're sorting through clothes and throwing away all this stuff because most people don't understand quality levels of, like, what you should be donating and what you shouldn't. And a lot of stuff comes in covered in grime.
Yeah.
And, you know, and whatever, like, just stains and body stains, like, whatever, just, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's dirty work, yep. And it's in a horrible facility. There's a perpetual mountain of clothing in the middle of the warehouse that I'm talking is probably 20 feet high, maybe like 15, 20 feet high, but it's spread out like a bit. It takes up a lot of room in the middle of the warehouse. And that's just the pile of clothes that gradually gets pulled away from and sorted through at separate stations. And, but it gradually gets refilled all the time too. But, and all the stuff that's deemed kind of too gross to go to the public or to go in their stores. Cause mind you, all this stuff is now being sold at a cheap price. And it's, you know, and it does help the cause, but they're getting these donations and then selling them, you know. And,
right, yeah, yeah.
And so the stuff that's not worthy of being sold all gets put in a baling machine and sent overseas in bales to, like, you know, countries that need them, which is why it is a reputable charity. It's just as someone that needed to go there and stay there, like the way they run this thing, there's more to it, but... You know, are you following me so far?
Well, you know, I have a little inside knowledge. Thank you very much, because I worked at Goodwill for a short time. And I did that not because I was in need of help, just because I was into antiques. And I thought, okay, I'm hitting up all these, you know, secondhand stores trying to find cool stuff. What if I work at one? It gives me the inside track. But from my experience, I know exactly what you're talking about with all this crappy crap that people tend to drop off thinking, oh, yeah, well, whatever. It's like they almost use these charities as a garbage can as well.
Absolutely.
They're like, hey, you know, what the hell? I cleaned out my closet. I cleaned out my attic. I'm just going to throw it all in bags and just leave it on the doorstep.
Yeah.
But Goodwill, I wasn't – I kind of noticed that they weren't – You keep, you know, you've stated that Salvation Army is a reputable charity, a good charity. Goodwill, I don't think so. Personally. So I was like, you know what? I thought this would be more fun than it really is. I think I did it for a couple weeks. I did get some cool Star Wars glasses.
Nice.
From BK back in the day. So, yeah, ooh, is right. But that was it. But yeah, I am following you. I think our listeners would be as well, basically, because you're just describing, you know, any kind of like a setting where there's basically a bunch of trash put into a heap and they pay people a ridiculously low amount of money to go through it and sort it.
Right.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they cover their asses as far as making it a recovery program, because they do have you go to like a couple of groups. There might be like one a week of some kind of a relapse prevention group or something. And they do require everyone who's, yeah, you've worked an 8-hour day and they make you go. I don't remember if it was 5 days a week or just a couple or like 3 days every other day or every day. It's been so long, but to go to meetings like an AA meeting at, you know, 7 o'clock or whatever time they happen to be. And not just that. So that's the recovery part of it. The more important thing is that every Sunday you have to go to a church service and you have to get dressed up for it. And they will give you a voucher if you don't have proper clothing to buy clothes at their store. As a worker, you're not entitled to get free clothes. They let you get stuff. So in case you don't have anything for church, and because they make you, even though it's just you guys, you're not going to a public church. It's just all the clients going with the staff to a church in the building. You have to be all dressed up on Sunday. You have to go on Wednesday. You also have a church service after work before your AA meeting that you have to go to. And but that one you don't have to get dressed up for. But then you also have Bible study 2 days a week for hour long classes. So the religious thing is very, you know, that's more important than the drug treatment program. It's more that they're trying to convert and, you know, push that whole Christian thing on you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I signed up for it. I knew that it was a Christian program. I didn't know it was going to be that crazy. But that kind of thing where it's like you barely have any time for yourself. And just a quick thing. I know I'm kind of going off on this, but the first day you're there, you are doing interviews and they're letting you kind of get your bed together and whatever you're moving in. But since you are staying there that day, they call it like that you owe them that day's rent. So you're supposed to, you have to make up that first day's work, but they're nice about it. They let you, your first Saturday, they let you work a half day but then you got to work the other half of it the following Saturday. So your first two weekends, you don't even have a full Saturday off because you have to make up that day you were, you know, unpacking and getting there. Like,
you know what this is sounding like to me right now? Because if you brought up child labor in like a third world country, everybody knows it happens. We're all wearing shirts made in Bangladesh or Barbie dolls made in Taiwan. And it's like, oh, those kids make 63 cents an hour to assemble these freaking goods that we use and enjoy every day. And oh, the outrage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're telling me the Salvation Army is using addicts in a similar fashion and only paying them $5 a week?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
$5 a week for 40 hours of work.
That's correct.
And there's probably loopholes because, yet again, you mentioned it's a recovery program.
I want to wrap myself out here, though. There is, so if you stay for the 6 months, by the time you leave, you have worked up to $20 a week. But it's over the course of however long you're there, it gradually moves up from 5 to 6 to 7, all the way up to 20. I forget how quickly it moves up each dollar, but the most it caps at 20. So you might be making $20 a week by the end of your 6 month stay.
Okay. And,
but get this, you're at a drug program. You graduate after 6 months. Where are you going to go? You haven't saved any money. You haven't built a life. You've been working for this machine for 6 months. Most halfway houses let you go out and find a job. So when you're done, you can actually get it, you know, have your own place, save up some money. This place, but they will let you stay after you've worked your 6 months and get a job. But it's like, you know, now they're charging you like, you know, basically a full rent. Like it's a good amount of money where it's hard to save up. Like they're still, you know, and most people don't even make it those 6 months. So basically they don't, you know, those apartments, I don't even know if I knew anyone that was staying in them, the actual,
what
know,
a racket, after the 6 months. Holy macaroni. I mean, really, you know, cause I'm thinking now you're there sorting through stuff, right? There's got to be other employees that aren't in the rehabilitation program that work, or is it just volunteers or what?
No, there's employees.
So they're making whatever, you know, $8 an hour, $7, whatever the case may be, but they're making a per hour wage and they go home every day.
Yeah.
But they work with the addicts who are only making $5 a week. Isn't that something?
I think the only employees there are, though, I think it might be like the supervisory people. So it's not like, I think pretty much all the people that are doing the sifting through shit are addicts at the one I was at in Worcester, Mass. And a few of the people that work in the store, because there is the store there too, Sally's Boutique, they call it, where they sell the stuff, you know, they have a store on the same property. And that there are a few addicts that work there that have been there for a long time, you know, so they've earned the reputation, I mean, the clout, if you will, to work in the storefront part. But yeah, so I mean, some of those store workers might be, you know, civilians, if you will. Some of the staff might be civilians, are like street worker people, you know, not street workers. That sounds like prostitutes, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I
but like non-clients. So it's basically just the supervisory people and maybe the kitchen staff. I forget, you know, I was only there for a short amount of time because I couldn't handle it, man. I couldn't hack it. You're freshly clean. I had a hard time just staying sober. Never mind, you know, pretending I can handle all this Christian stuff, like several hours a week. Like I, you know, it was weird, but
yeah, like so I didn't make a super long. You know, I'm kind of quiet listening to you. Normally
that's fine. I'm talking a lot.
Well, I was about to do what I was just talking about. I talk all over you, but this time I didn't because I'm listening. I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, you know, it's always amazing to me. And I know a lot of other folks out there because you don't know how some things work, you know, and when you find out, it's pretty interesting. I mean, it could be something like this, like the Salvation Army, to even if you were in a supermarket in the plastic bag that you use to put your bananas in, there's some dude in a factory out there who's printing on those bags, like maybe I sound crazy. I don't know. But I'm just thinking, like, there's always a process behind something that we're not aware of. We don't know. We're blissfully unaware in a lot of cases. So I'm very interested when you talk about this stuff because it's enlightening, eye-opening, and informative. I think I just said that with my cold. It's like informative. Informative, but informative. Get those sniffles out. But yeah, still, it's just, wow.
Yeah, you know, it's just we don't see every path in life that there is, you know, so it's always interesting to see one that you're not familiar with. They're like one, how the sausage is made. I think we've used that phrase
many
a million times. Yeah.
We need you to go back now to that facility and liberate the other addicts.
Ooh.
Okay.
Just go in with like a fucking kilo of dope.
Well, no, not that's not what I was.
They'll all leave.
Yeah. I was actually thinking more like a 80s action movie, like you tie the red headband on your head like Rambo. You kick open the door and you're like, no more church, motherfuckers. I'm setting you all free. And like you fucking let off a flaming arrow and burn the giant heap of dirty clothes and everybody's running around like, woohoo, we're free. And then no one has a place to go or get their $5 at the end of the week. But still, just, wow. I don't know if that would make people think twice about donating, money.
It makes me, you know.
You know?
But
yeah,
it makes me think twice. But
yeah,
that's why I was saying nobody else should, you know, make their decision based on what I'm saying. You know, that's just why I get weirded out when I see the buckets and I, you know, but I don't know. It's just me personally. I'll donate to frickin' Red Cross or, you know, maybe not Goodwill.
Christmas. That's what you just did. You get the war on Christmas. That's what you're doing. Not exactly Rambo style as I was imagining in my mind, but still, you know, now you've ruined Christmas for everybody. Now we know. Don't fucking donate to the Salvation Army, people. Don't do it.
I don't know if you want to say that.
I said it's too late. Yeah. It's already come out of my face. Don't donate to the Salvation Army.
Fuck Sally's.
Fuck Sally's. You see Santa, you punch him in the goddamn face. That's what you do. You take his bucket, you dump it all over the ground. Hopefully there's a sewer grate right there so all the nickels and dimes or whatever the hell they put in there rolls down the grate so no one can reach it. And they're all fucked. And, you know... There you go.
They'll send an addict to go down and get all the change.
Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be a paid supervisor making sure he doesn't put any of that money in his pocket. You know, his raw red arm from trying to stick it through the sewer grate. But seriously, that's fucking wild stuff, you know? And I like Christmas. I really do. It's something I've warmed up to over the years. I was always like, you know, Christmas is like corporate and everything else. And it's so blown out of proportion. And I'm not a religious person either. So I don't see the whole, you know, Christ symbolism involved. I just see fucking Nintendos and, you know, fucking old credit card machines being fucking rung up.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you happen to see that movie 8-Bit Christmas on HBO Max?
I haven't watched it yet.
It's so fucking good.
Okay.
So, and it was a book. I haven't read the book. Shame on me. punch me in the face like you'd hit Santa. But that fucking movie... I think I've watched it like 4 or 5 times.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
I have been in the Christmas spirit. That's what I'm trying to get to here. I have been so happy and blissful knowing that Christmas is around the corner because I have a child and he believes in the magic of Santa. It's a wonderful thing. I never want it to go away. It's something I dread. I might have even brought this up before because it's one of my biggest fears is, you know, knowing that the fat man in the red suit is just the fat man who's normally sitting in the fucking recliner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. I should have, I think if anybody's got their kids listening to this show anyway, they should probably be, reassessed as parents and maybe, you know, rethink their choices in life, but still.
What if like 8-year-olds are listening to us? What if they clicked on it? What if they're fans?
Well, you know, these things are labeled explicit.
Yeah.
So if you are that mature of an 8-year-old and you can handle it and your parents are letting you go willy-nilly all over the place and just listen to whatever the fuck you want to listen to, then you know what? You deserve what I just said. Spoiled it for you.
Well, these kids don't have a chance.
They don't. Not with us involved. Not with this kind of, but anyway.
Or their parents, but go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been jolly, holly, fucking Mr. Christmas on the surface. But then like when I'm alone, I've been really fucking depressed lately. I've had like this weird, I don't know if it's a mantra or something in my head where I keep referring or thinking of things I have in the past tense is like had. Now, for example's sake, I have a dog. I've mentioned this on the show before. And I, when I think of the dog, I'm almost projecting into the future, thinking about when I had the dog, like the dog has died, the dog is gone. And I'm almost imagining a conversation I'd be having with family or friends about the memories we had with the dog. Why am I doing this? Why am I not living in the now? Why am I bumming myself out with these kind of thoughts about how everything will end? Everything eventually will be over. There's nothing I can do about it. Woe is me. The despair, the doom, the fucking gloom. Yet, but yet, when I get out of work, man, I'm playing fucking Christmas songs, and I'm like, holy shit, this fucking Kelly Clarkson tune is an absolute fucking banger. Yeah, let's fucking go Christmas. And then I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs and going, yeah, woe is fucking me. What is happening?
I don't know, man. I think it's natural. I've been kind of going through it too. I mean, I don't know. It's, I recently had my oldest cat, like the pet I've actually had longer than any other, passed away recently, got hit by a car. It was a shitty day. You know, yeah. Some people make fun of me for caring about a cat that much, but I had a really shitty time of it because we were close and I love animals. Our listeners know I love animals. I was talking about dogs earlier.
But you're always talking about
animals. I was thinking
animals.
About that recently.
Always. So wait, real quick, who are these people making fun of you? Who?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just fucking projecting.
You're imagining people fucking laughing at you?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Still. I just know people that hate cats over life, you know, throughout life.
I don't like them.
Yeah, but you don't want them dead, right?
Like, well, no. And I can sympathize.
You're not laughing at somebody.
No,
that
you
had a
care.
Pet cat.
And that's important. Yeah. You care about your animals. You love these things. So I definitely feel for you. So, yeah. That's a bummer.
But that's my point. I was thinking the same thing. You know, I don't mean to hijack this too,
no,
but I'm just saying, like, I've been thinking with all my other animals, every time I'm petting them, I'm like, you know, pretty soon or at some point, not soon, but like, I'm going to be feeling this way about this animal that, you know, I'm going to be feeling the same loss. And it's almost like every relationship you create, you know, is going to end at some point. You're going to have to say goodbye. Hopefully maybe you luck out and die before, before the person you care about. So you don't have to deal with it. But it's true. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard. Every relationship is going to end in either heartache or fucking
death.
You know, death.
It's fucking terrible. And I'm almost an expert in self-sabotage. You know what I mean? But not like I'm aware of it. It's almost like a subconscious thing wherein I'm fucking whistling Dixie, happy as a pig in fucking shit. And then my own mind has to sabotage that. Like, whoa, pump the brakes there, Saint Nick. Take it easy, you jolly fucking bastard. You can't be that happy all the time. Let me give you something to think about that's really going to bring you back down to earth. You know?
Yeah. It's like a governor on your happiness, like a something holding it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
a limit.
A limit or just, I just referred to it as self-sabotage. Like there's another personality within my psyche who's just like, no, you don't deserve this. Stop that. You know? No, you're not entitled to feel good and just with no worries in the world. That's not how you've been your entire life. Why would you feel that now? Like, no, you know? And I don't know if there's like a way to cure it or take care of it or any kind of like techniques to calm that down. I mean, I generally just think of sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when I fucking, my mind starts racing out of control, just, hey, yeah, remember those good times when I was getting that poon? Yeah. I always put on that creepy ass voice when I talk about anything like that too. It's like I draw out the words. Oh yeah. Remember that sweet piece of ass? Yeah. But no, seriously, it'll calm me down. It's like it's like the most distracting thing I can think about, other than maybe singing I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. Is thinking about past exploits or whatever, just to kinda, it's almost like when folks would say, oh, well, you got a headache, go stub your toe. Because then you're going to be like, oh, my toe hurts instead of your head hurts, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a distraction technique or something, I suppose, which is the wrong thing to do. It makes me sound like a pervert. I was just...
Yes and no. Well, if it works, if it keeps you from thinking of your own mortality or the mortality of the people you love, to remember a positive time you had, like sex isn't like... We can like shame ourselves for enjoying the sex we had. And maybe, you know, maybe some of them weren't the most moral sex exploits in the, you know, maybe some of them were a little, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I just mean, like, there's no point in getting ashamed of it if it's making, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could think of another happy thought.
Yeah, I suppose. Freshly. Think of puppies.
Yeah.
Think of your puppy. Oh, no, but you think, then you'll start thinking it's going to die.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, like, freshly baked cupcakes, cookies, you know, a pie on the sill. Start thinking about food. It's going to be about food now. I've just totally changed it to food. But for some reason, that would make me think of something else. Like, I don't even know. Like, oh, the fucking carcinogens in that goddamn fucking pie. It's going to kill you 20 years from now. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's just thinking about fucking getting the boom boom, getting down, getting jiggy with it for some reason. It's like, oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. Ah, that was fun.
You know what I noticed?
What?
All your distractions are more earthly things. Yeah. Like it's like food, sex, you know what I mean? Like whatever it is. And I think the answer lies more in like, you just gotta like accept that everything is temporary. And like, maybe that's a really freeing thing. Maybe if you just think of it a different way, it's like, well, maybe none of the bad shit I've done in my life really is that big of a deal. Or maybe I shouldn't get so worked up over this because everything's temporary. And who's going to, you know, if you turn it around, it can be really liberating, I think. Yeah. I'm trying to be sunshiny here for Christmas.
No, totally. Yeah, sunshiny for Christmas. I mean, I could go to India. I could go find to Tibet and go find That's myself true. Spiritually.
Not a lot of ass out there, I guess.
No, definitely not. A lot of hair. A lot of bald dudes with long beards and
yak hair robes.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching Get Back, the Beatles documentary on Disney Plus.
I'm
plugging all the TV. This is my problem too. I watch way too much fucking television. I have been reading some good comic books recently, so that's something of note.
That's good.
But yeah, so anyway, when they went to India and they met with their guru. And I was looking at him and I'm like, look at this. Who the fuck would listen to that guy? It looks like he hasn't taken a bath in like fucking a month and a half. He's wearing a fucking curtain for Christ's sakes. Like, what's going on here? But there's spiritual enlightenment to be had. So maybe that's what I need to do. I gotta go, go abroad.
Maybe.
Stop thinking eat, about pray, broads love. And go abroad.
Yeah. You see, eat, pray, love.
I have
that
no.
What that whole thing
That's the Julia Roberts vehicle. Correct?
Yeah, but it was a book also, you know.
Yet another book, yeah. No, yeah. I haven't read the book or seen the picture. I don't like Julia Roberts.
The book didn't have Julia Roberts in it.
Yeah, but I'm always going to think of Julia Roberts because, I knew the movie first and foremost, so she's always going to be associated with it.
Yeah, well.
I would read the book and be like, oh, that's Julia. That's Julia or those fucking big chiclets she's got in her mouth saying that shit right there. Yeah. Those chiclets are teeth. That's what I'm trying to say.
I figured.
Oh, good. Those are teeth. Big, big teeth. Yeah. So, well, hopefully I can turn this frown upside down because I am, you know, I'm happy about Christmas. I'm feeling good about it overall. It's just, you know, that little nagging brain worm that's out to get me, man.
Yeah. It's hard. I hope you get through it. I hope you can find the joy in this season because I usually don't like Christmas at all, but I'm actually not, I don't know, despite, having the death in my feline family and like just kind of, despite that, I don't know, I'm doing okay this year. This is like the first year I haven't really minded the change from fall to, you know, winter or summer.
Yeah, it's tough on you. Fall. Yeah, I know that's a rough one for you. I don't really get hit with the seasonal depression. You know, you do.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that as far as what I'm going through right now. But I'm glad you're not, you know, don't have a heavy dose of it this year.
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, I've been able to combat it. I've also had some new, you know, I'm on some new medications, so it's helping a little, like, you know, whatever. But that's another thing maybe you should look into.
Medication? I was going to say I've been doing some retail therapy.
Ooh,
yeah! Bought a lot of shit this year. I fucking ordered all kinds of crap. Everybody's gonna have a lot of presents underneath the tree, courtesy of little old moi.
Well, yeah. Well, that's generous. Generous make you feel good, right? Being generous.
Yeah. Well, charity starts at home.
Hey, callback.
Oh, yeah. But no, I mean, I like seeing people's. I've always been a thoughtful gift giver. So it's not like I'm just buying when I say shit. It's not like I'm just grabbing whatever the fuck. Like, you know, with someone like a Black Friday deal. Oh, look, slippers are fucking $5. I'm going to buy slippers. They're going to be good for somebody. I'm going to give them to somebody. Yeah. No, I don't do that. I think about the people I love, what they like, what they don't like. Little conversations we may have had in the past that could include a hint lost in the whispers of time. You know what I mean? All of these things, I take note of them. So when it comes, that period of the year to, in fact, buy gifts, I go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Or I know this person really is into this. And then I stock up on that kind of shit. So I like buying stuff. I try. I got a couple blemishes on my record, but this is not many.
It's a sweater! It's a sweater!
And those were only because I was obsessed with acquiring an item. Maybe I'll save that for another day.
Okay.
If we have another Christmas show. Because that's actually a good story about being obsessive, compulsive, I guess.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, so I have bought a lot of stuff. And before we move on, because I know we got Nate's notes to do. It's been so long since we've had Nate's notes. Oh, my God.
It's been a while.
I know, man. I'm jonesing for some fucking Nate's notes here. But, yeah, before we get into that, I was just talking about buying stuff. You know what? You need to buy something. And, Nate, I'm not talking to you in particular. I'm talking to everybody out there. Like we mentioned earlier, the earbud people, the people in the shower, the people on the toilet, wherever the hell you listen to our show from. I am curious, though. I'd like to know where someone's main... I guess work. Most people would listen at work.
Car,
you know, where you got to go make money to buy stuff. Well, guess what? We have partners of the show that are great to spend your money on. Stocking stuffers. All that swanky good stuff, man. So, if you've never heard the show before or heard me plug these partners, just keep in mind this is all stuff I have tried and used and like personally because I'm not trying to... just say, oh, yeah, go buy that piece of garbage because they fucking send us something. No, no, no. It's good stuff. So definitely check these guys out. And first up, we got NorthlandVapor.com. All your vaping needs can be met. They're e-liquids. I love them because they don't have a chemical taste to them, which is a big deal because I recently ran out of some juice, and in a pinch, I need to go to another shop. And I got some, and boy, did it just taste like the synthetic, gross-ass crap. That's a good description, right? Gross-ass crap to show you just how nasty and terrible it really was. I missed my Northland. I'm like, I cannot deviate. I cannot stray. Oh, my God. Northland, because all their liquids are diketone and artificial sweetener-free, hence why they taste so good and are so smooth. Not smoky, like my voice, a la Demi Moore. Alpine Flinty. Hemp. Flinty. Flinty. That's a Seinfeld thing there. Alpinehemp.com for CBD. Everybody likes CBD. If you don't like CBD, I don't know what the hell's the matter with you because it helps with so much stuff. It's ridiculous. Name an ailment. Spin the wheel of problems you could have in your life. Sleeplessness, headaches, depression, anxiety, whatever the heck the case may be. You pop some CBD. It might be just the thing that you need. Now, I personally use it to, in fact, help me sleep, but maybe I'm going to start exploring more options to help me relax and maybe nip that inner voice I got in the butt here. I think I said butt instead of bud.
But sorry, both work.
Both work. But you can check out both sites, Northland Vapor, AlpineHemp.com, and use code SELLINGOUT19 to save 19% off your entire order, which is good, which means... more shillings in your pocket, which is always helpful during this season. Now, Alpine is also kind of diversified. They get some other sites out there with Delta 8, some other products underneath their umbrella or another notch in their bedpost. And you can check those out at wonkyweeds.com or deathbygummybears.com, which is actually a very long web address, don't you think? Deathbygummybears. Yeah. Almost
sorry, it's kinky. Memorable.
It's memorable. Yeah. Like I was going to say kinky, you say memorable, same diff. But
they're not mutually exclusive.
No, absolutely not. And then last but not least, we got Spunk Lube. Oh, Spunky Spunk Spunk. an award-winning lubricant used by professionals in the adult film industry. But why let them have all the fun? No. You can go on spunklube.com and order Spunk Lube for yourself and have it discreetly shipped to your door just in time for you to frolic on Christmas Eve. So get over to spunklube.com today and you can thank me later. So now we've had Nate's triumphant return. I mean, the beginning of the show was epic, just introducing you, having you back, open arms. So let's keep those good vibes rolling by kicking it into a segment that we love and like to call Nate's Notes.
Dust off your LPs. It's time for Nate's Notes.
When I was in my late teens, it seemed like I was at a show every weekend. If I wasn't catching one of my favorite national acts on a nearby tour stop, I was at a club watching one of the countless local bands, or quite often playing a show with them in one of my own projects. I probably saw 100 bands back then in the 90s, possibly a couple hundred. The hardcore and alternative music scene in New England, in Massachusetts specifically, was super vibrant. There were usually 4 or 5 bands playing each show. I myself played in 3 different bands that gigged in the area. Split was a hip-hop, hardcore, new metal sort of group. Too Far Gone, later renamed Mindfield, was an electronic rock band, like a mellower Nine Inch Nails or maybe a heavier Depeche Mode. And Molasses, aka Molasses 3000, was a really hard-to-describe project featuring none other than my esteemed co-host Dave Schultz, along with our good friend Floyd. Molasses played everything from acoustic ballads to industrial music, from sugary pop songs to experimental sound collages. But my point is that there were a lot of fucking bands. As the 90s ended, I lost touch with the local scene. My bands had all broken up. A few of the biggest and coolest all-ages venues where independent bands in Worcester County could play and build a following had closed down. I had developed a crippling drug habit by then and stopped doing much other than heroin. I'm sure the scene continued, but I knew nothing about it. Over the last couple of years, I've been putting my life back together, and I've definitely come back to enjoying live music. But I'm not as young as I used to be. I mean, I've attended my share of shows by national acts since those days, but I'm talking maybe 15 shows total since the turn of the century. I've been playing in my current band, The Tribe, for the last 7 or 8 years, which is actually the longest I've ever been part of any band. But we don't play the underground punk club circuit. We play breweries and bars, festivals and private parties. I love it, but it's not like I've really reconnected with the local scene. At least not as it existed before when I was a lad. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, my buddy Emma invited me to go to a local hardcore show with her and a couple friends. Emma's husband couldn't go, and he said he'd feel better about her going if I went with them, being that it was a potentially violent show in a somewhat shady area. It was a sort of recreational chaperone situation. Emma assured me that it was going to be fun, that the bands were supposed to be good. I, of course, had no idea who any of them were when I was sent the flyer. The names sounded a little generic for hardcore music. I didn't do any research on them ahead of time. And honestly, I was a bit cynical about the whole thing. First of all, I'm now in my 40s. My age, combined with my natural social anxiety issues, makes me prone to isolation. The whole pandemic scenario has only intensified that shit. So just going out at all was kind of a tall order. On top of that, I thought of the countless local hardcore bands from my youth. As exciting as the scene was to a teenage me back then, I have to admit that there were a lot of bands that kind of sounded the same. Hardcore and punk in general often employ fairly simple song structures and chord progressions. I mean, there are only so many notes anyway, and so many combinations to make out of them. And that was 25 years ago. Like, How long does a local hardcore band last? Mine broke up after a few years. Think of how many young people have grown into and back out of that scene, starting and ending bands of their own in the two-decade interim since I even checked out a local punk show. My mind jumped to this curmudgeonly conclusion that I was gonna go check out some young folks doing the same shit that hundreds of other bands had done previously. I agreed to go because Emma's a good friend, and it's good to say yes to things and not isolate. And plus, I do always enjoy a live show. So what the hell? We pulled up to this nondescript brick factory or mill-type building in an industrial part of Holyoke, Mass. The only sign that it was even the right place was the full parking lot, and then the muffled sound of drums and bass coming from inside once we exited the car. Going inside, we followed some other much younger concertgoers up a cartoonishly long and winding staircase and down a dirty old hallway that twisted and turned, passing several doors until we got to one that apparently would enter into the venue. It looked like it could have opened into a storage closet. It looked like all the other doors, but there were people passing in and out through it, so we followed suit. And incredibly, it opened into this small but really impressive club with a bar and merch table wrapping around one corner and a stage across from where we entered. The soundboard and office were in a loft that actually hung over the heads of the crowd. It made such great use of the space and had such a cool atmosphere and feel to it. I was blown away that such a spot could be hidden in such a boring, mundane industrial building, and on like the third or fourth floor to boot. I forget exactly. The one weird thing was the age gap between me and the rest of the crowd. I don't really know if anyone was staring at me because of my age, because I also get stares for my ridiculous height. But I was acutely aware of it. It may have been my social anxiety flaring up, but I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm even older than the guys running the place. So we had arrived a little late and only managed to catch the last two acts that night. I could get really detailed in reviewing them, but the story's getting kind of long, so I'll sum it up by saying this. By the second song I watched that night, I felt like such a moron for prejudging these bands before even checking them out. Sure, there were elements of music I used to listen to as a kid. Sure, there were a few riffs or breakdowns that I've heard before, but all musicians take their influence and try to do their own thing with elements from them. David Bowie himself had this awesome quote where he said he takes the sawdust and scraps from other artists and takes scotch tape and a little love and makes something new from all of it. I felt like a doofus. But I was also super happy to be proven wrong in my pessimism. I even talked to the singer of the headlining band afterward and gushed to him about how I used to play shows back in the 90s and I haven't even been to a show in years. But after seeing you guys tonight and seeing the way the crowd responded to you, I feel like the scene is secure. You young people are holding it down, man. It was a great show. The front man, who looked to me like he was maybe 20 years old, tops, shook my hand and said, "Thanks for the kind words, man." I don't know if I conveyed my feelings accurately, but I really felt some weird swell of emotions. There was the nostalgia factor of going back to an important part of my youth, the excitement of seeing a couple really good bands, and I don't even know if I mentioned this yet, but I had eaten a couple grams of psychedelic mushrooms earlier that night, so it was all even more profound. For all I know, I freaked out the kid by being kind of sappy and weird, but you know what? It's what I felt at the moment, and I'm glad I shared it with him. I had forgotten how visceral a small, intimate hardcore show can be. There's an energy there that you don't find at any other type of show. Even a death metal show is nothing like it. Of course, the crowds are often more violent, and even if you're not participating in that personally, you have to kind of be on guard. But that's not all of it. Maybe it's something about the desperation and authenticity of these small town bands combined with the idealism of its youthful members who haven't had their morality or principles compromised by the world's harsh realities yet. I know I'm sounding curmudgeonly and jaded again. Whatever it is, I'm glad I went. I'm glad I didn't succumb to my lazy, reclusive tendencies. It was a great experience, and it really did rekindle something inside me. I'm really grateful to Emma for inviting me, and to the bands Wisdom in War and Dracula for putting on a couple of powerful sets that night. Hopefully Dracula's singer didn't get too weirded out by me going up to him afterwards. I hope he was like, cool, that OG just gave me a compliment. But for all I know, he rolled his eyes as I walked away and muttered, okay, boomer.
I am willing to guarantee, he said, this old motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, definitely said that.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, whatever. Like, you know, a compliment is always good to receive. But he's probably like, yeah, he's not a hot chick. What's going on with... I mean, because you put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
If you were in your 20s and someone came up to you after a show and it's like a 40-year-old dude, you're like, oh, well, he probably wants to have his way with me, put me in a garbage bag, and throw me in the woods.
Yeah, do you see how big his pupils were? That guy was fucking crazy.
That guy was insane. You know,
yeah, no, it was fun, man. It was good.
Your piece reminds me of, like, just being young and jamming out. You mentioned the band that we were in amongst your other, your respectable resume of acts. But it's a good feeling thinking about those times and just jamming out and being wild and crazy and all the fun we had. And I am going to call it back again because I'm terrible like that, if you'd permit me to do so. Is I brought up that Beatles documentary that everybody's watching, that I also indeed watched. And there are moments you're taken aback. You're like, wow, it's the fucking Beatles. They're like the biggest band of all time. But they were just having these fucking jam sessions that were fucking terrible. Like, they were just goofing off, being fucking nuts, just to kind of like let loose and maybe warm up a little bit, I guess. But I could see myself participating in that, or like the way that we used to do things too, like the process of writing and hammering things out and getting together and just letting loose. It didn't matter if you're the most successful group in the world or of all time, or if you're in a garage in fucking Worcester, Massachusetts. You know what I mean? A lot of the process is just the same fucking thing. And a lot of the emotions that you go through, the sensations, the feelings, all that are all the same. So you could live in a fucking mansion and have a fucking chauffeur, or you could fucking ride a Huffy with no seat.
Yeah.
You can still have the same experience.
It's true. Universal.
Yeah. It really is, you know? Yeah. So that's what you kind of made me think about as I was listening to you and your adventures of going to this little hole in the wall to see the kids play.
Yeah, man. It was fucking great, man. Like, I don't know. As older people, we tend to always think, like, man, it was better when I was a kid, or this was like, that was when it was real, you know, or that was this. And hardcore is already like one of those scenes where it's kind of like, people are kind of douchey, and it's like, you know, I'll admit it, like where you're like, oh, that person's a poser, or that person's, you know? And so, like, if anything, going there, having had the youth I had, part of me didn't care that I was the old guy, because I was like, you know what? I came from it. Like, nobody can question my fucking, you know what I mean? Like, my shit. Like, I don't know. I mean, not that I really thought of it, but I'm socially awkward, anxious, and I was on some mushrooms. So it was like all like this whole weird, like, everyone's so young, dude. Like, I don't know. It was bizarre. I would see people and I'd be like, I knew that guy. I knew that same person, but it was a different guy when I was a kid. But it's like, they're doing the same thing. They're acting the same way. You know, this person's not in a band and he doesn't work here, but he's like best friends with all the guys. So he's hanging out, you know, I was that guy at one point or whatever, you know.
I think it's almost a shame that they don't know your backstory or your origins, because, you know, we just kind of alluded to the fact that you just might be that creepy guy who paid the compliment. But, you know, back when we were active in the scene, you, of course, more so than me. I was just a blip. But, you know, there's a lot of respect for you and your talents and what you could do, and some of the crazy things that you had done on stage and everything else. And don't know, maybe it's even worse if they did know. I don't know. But I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. Cause you always, or at least in my case, I almost don't want to tell people stories about the past. Like if I just met them or if they're younger.
Yeah.
Because I do think they'll dismiss it. They'll just go, yeah, whatever, whatever. You know, all you fucking old sons of bitches always have a story to tell. I've heard them all, whatever. But you almost want to get that respect or kind of get on that level where they look at you and go, okay, maybe I should listen to this guy because he has seen shit. He knows shit. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense or no?
It does. No, it does. I think at the moment, I just wanted to say how his performance made me feel, because I felt like I, as an artist, would like to hear somebody say that, wow, dude, that was really cool. And I think maybe it was that part of me that wanted to why would I bring up, oh, I used to play shows back in the 90s and this, like, unless I did want him to know, you know, probably that was like ego or whatever, but I just was like, you know, as an old school kind of, you know, hardcore kid, like, I really dug what you did. And I told him, like, as cheesy as it sounds, yeah, you guys are holding it down. Like, the scene is alive and well. Like, I can rest easy.
Pass the torch, man. You know, it's all probably for naught because you were enjoying mushrooms. So you thought you were giving him a compliment, but you really were just saying something along the lines of, there are toads in my shoes.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's like, whatever, guy. That made no sense. Adios, amigo. I go smoke a fucking big fat spliff by the van. No,
the kids
the
are
back.
All hardcore. They're all straight edge kids at those shows. I was like afraid to admit that I was fucked up.
Yeah, it's like, tough. What? Yeah. It's not cool, man. So, not hip. Straight edge. I that's still a thing, which is, I don't know.
I know. There were kids smoking cigarettes outside, so not all straight edge, you know.
They should be vaping. What the hell are they doing smoking? Dumb bastards.
They should call Northland Vapors.
They should. But I mean, when I think of the whole straight edge scene from when we were young and how we would mock them, make fun of them, treated them with zero respect or whatsoever. And now in hindsight, I go, well, maybe they had something going on. I doubt they fucked up their lives half as bad as we did due to substances. Mm. But, there's still that little inkling, that little sliver inside me who's like, yeah, fuck that, man. Fuck that straight edge shit, you fucking dork. Fucking
tribalism is tribalism. You know, tribalism's bad either way. Any, like, you're bad and I'm good just because of this. It's like, I don't know.
Dangerous.
I say that, but I fall prey to it too.
Yeah,
but
it's lethal. That's what that is. I'm fucking spitting poison over here. Yeah. That's my problem. Just Mr. Negative. That's me. I'm going to get a fucking business card that says it. Dave, Mr. Negative Schultz. You got something good to say? I'm going to say, I'm going to tear it apart. Tear it to fucking shreds. I'm an asshole. That's
maybe
me.
You need to eat some mushrooms.
No, hell no. It's the last fucking thing on earth. I mean, someone would probably say, oh, you need a fucking, I don't know, use leeches for medicinal purposes. I'd be like, absolutely. Before I'd say yes to hallucinating again. That part of that chapter is fucking sealed shut, my friend.
Yeah. Huh?
Long gone. That's for you. You can keep the, as we said, the proverbial torch going with that. I'm I'm good. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. So anyway. Yeah. This is the rough part right now. This is the tough thing that I always have to do. Is bringing this show to a close.
Hit the brakes.
You know, hit the brakes. It's been a while since we get to catch up. And, you know, I'm sure people are enjoying our witty banter or lack thereof.
How could they not? How could they not, Dave?
But, I mean, we got lives to live. You got mushrooms to eat, and I got fucking TV shows to watch and some self-loathing and, things to do. So we do actually have to hit the road, but I really hope we'll get back together in a couple weeks, and I'd like to do something maybe pro-Christmassy.
Okay. Or Xmas. And I'll do anti-Christmas.
Or holiday. We'll debate. Well, no, I don't want
to. I'm just kidding.
It's funny you bring that up because my wife, she's never been a podcast listener, and then she got into this true crime stuff lately.
Yeah.
And I've always mocked true crime like I have the straight edgers of my youth, where it's like, okay, like you said, tribalism, I guess. But I'm like, you know, this whole genre, people go gaga over it. Everybody's fucking stopping what they do to start a true crime podcast, true crime, because sometimes you wonder about the authenticity behind it just because, oh, well, it's hip, it's cool, everybody's doing it, let me start doing it too. There was a TV show called Only Murders in the Building, which was actually very good on Hulu. Yeah. Little recommendation. There we go. Look at me. I'm on brand. But it's got Steve Martin and Martin Short and
A lot of Martins.
Martin and what's her
Martin
name?
Lawrence in it.
There's a girl. She was a young singer, and I can't remember her name, which makes me sound like some kind of.
It's all right.
Yeah, like I don't respect women. I can't remember their fucking names.
I respect the young artist.
She's a producer on the damn show. Selma? Selena? Anyway, I stink.
Selena Gomez.
Thank you. Selena Gomez is on it, and she's wonderful. She's delightful. But they start a true crime podcast. Anyway, all right. So the point of my story is I'm listening to it. She's listening to it. And it's like the narrative, you know, they're telling the story. They're adding some little sound effects to whatever because it's based on something that really happened. And I was fucking bored to tears, man. I like my shows the way that we do ours, conversational, a little back and forth, unscripted, just fucking let it fly, you know?
Yeah,
I want that human connection. I don't want a news story.
Right, I could read that.
I could fucking, watch fucking Dateline or something. I sit in front of the fucking TV. The TV's full of that shit, too.
Yeah.
Why do I want to be listening to someone read me a story when I want to hear human beings connect? One-on-one or two-on-three or five times, it doesn't matter. Just people talking.
Getting real.
Getting real. You pick seven strangers to live in a house. And but you get my drift here, you know? So, yeah.
I got you, man. All right. I agree.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad. So I think I mentioned it earlier, but if you want to reach our show, it's easy. Socials at Selling Out Show. Nate's got the Facebook at Selling Out Show 1. Foam finger. Have you been on that Facebook in a while?
It's been a little while.
It's meta.
I've been on hiatus from life.
It's Meta. They changed their name, right? That's what they call now, Meta or something. Facebook.
Yeah.
Their whole branding. Maybe we should rebrand. What do you think?
All right. We need an avatar in the new Meta landscape.
Yeah.
VR shit.
There we go. But I mean, we just ditch our name. How about we just have no name? Can we do that? Just change the Selling Out Show to like nothing. Or can we do a symbol like Prince, perhaps?
Prince, yeah, maybe.
I don't know how they'd find it. But anyway, that's something we can explore later. I do want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time to listen to our humble little program. Virtual hugs for all of you. Hopefully we will be back soon because I like this a lot. So I am Dave. And that over there is Nate, and this has been The Selling Out Show.
Peace. Wake up to the devil.